Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 196. Our guest this week is a video game journalist and content creator since 2015, the head of Pen to Pixels, podcast host and guest frequently on the Indie Council and the Min-Max Show and on many others. Also a variety streamer on Twitch, we have Janet Garcia, or Gameonisis. Thank you for being
here. Hello. Good to be here. It's Gameonisis.
Gameonisis. Actually,
which is fair because it's a play on Dionysus, but some people pronounce Dionysus Dionysus, so.
Right.
It's not a good name to have chosen, but it is unique enough that I usually can get it, so it has one thing going for it. Hello, good to be here. You always remember you're 196th.
Yes.
So there you go.
You do Let's Plays on Tuesdays on Twitch. You do Best Games of the Year every Friday on Twitch. And it looks like on Pen to Pixels, too, you've got, like, best ofs, you know, sort of check-ins through the year. Which I like. I don't know if I've ever actually seen that before. I probably just haven't been paying attention. But I like the idea that, you know, okay, where are we right now in April? You know, where are we in June, etc.?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been fun. It's tough to keep up with. I am a little behind on quarter ones because it's already April. And then it's so hard to pull the trigger because games are always coming out and then you might miss something. So I'm wrestling with letting go of, like, hey, probably won't play a lot more, you know, Yakuza before making this first list, but, you know, that's what the rest of the year is for, hopefully.
Pen to Pixels is your project. Like, you were a writer at IGN, PlayStation Lifestyle.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. So yeah deep cuts.
Well, but all I'm saying is, you know, you went the freelance route, and this is sort of, you say on the site that this is a way for you to write things that you really want to write that maybe wouldn't necessarily get picked up as a freelance thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so great about writing for yourself is no one can tell you no. Obviously, there's plenty of benefit of collaborating with colleagues, having an editor, you know, having funding, many things that you might not be able to get on your own, but it's like, I can just cover whatever I want. I don't have to worry about how many views it gets or how much anything. It's just complete freedom to cover games how I want to cover games. And, you know, down the line, I'd love to look into getting funded just to be able to contract out pieces for people. But I love criticism at its core, and just being able to do however many reviews I can fit into my schedule has been really fun.
Is there ever an issue where you're like, ooh, do I write this for Pen and Pixels, or, like, should I shop this around?
Oh, no, I don't shop anything, really. I was always really bad at it, too. Like, shots of the people that, you know, I know in the space that constantly pitch and get, like, I have a feature here or a review here. Like, that's never been a strong suit. It's never been a big thing I've done. I usually have had home bases at different websites throughout the years, or different, even now, like, different places where it's like, cool, I work here and then I do whatever. I don't really shop anything around, and I don't think I really would. I think I could, I'm down to do stuff at other places, and I have here and there, but for the most part, yeah, I just do my own thing. Like, I don't even send it off anywhere. I just write it for myself.
Prince of Persia: The Last Crown is your first ever 5 out of 5 on Pen to Pixels. So, I mean, does that mean it's the best game ever?
No, definitely not. But it's the best game that I have reviewed for the site.
What makes a 5 out of 5?
I think a 5 out of 5, it's really a 9 or a 10 out of 10 is what it converts to, honestly. And I think it's a game that feels transcendent, a game that feels like a must play for anyone who's willing to dabble in that specific genre or style of game. I think those are kind of some of the core components. But admittedly, I have long been putting off writing, like, the page of here's what the scale really means. Like, I have the words associated, like bad, okay, good, great, incredible, but I haven't quite settled on the wording yet, mostly because every time I write it and kind of shop it to my family, they're like, I don't know if that's quite right. And I'm like, I think you might be right. So I just haven't published anything about it, but that's my interpretation of what a 5 out of 5 is,
right
off the top of my head.
How is, you know, there's so many sites that review or critique or whatnot video games. So how do you stand out in a saturated market?
Ooh, that's a great question. Oh, man. I feel like there's a lot of ways you can stand out. I will say, admittedly, I think my brand of criticism isn't like super revolutionary in terms of stylization. Like, I think I do the traditional looking at different components of the game and kind of adding up the sum of its parts in some ways. But to me, I think what makes reviews special and different from place to place, my site included, is the way that you can try to capture the essence of what you're feeling that will make sense to someone who has never played the game and may never play the game and has not necessarily played the games you have. So to me, it's about adding a layer of whether it's personal story, whether it's employing like metaphors, some way to conjure the feeling and to paint the picture. And I think that's what makes unique, like reviews unique. I think the other component too can be to a degree like the presentation, and that's where like the layout and site design comes in. Admittedly, outside of pull quotes, I don't think I have anything that's too review specific and flavoring. It's funny, I was just talking to a designer friend who's offered to help me out with like doing some elements of redesign to boost up the website, and that's something we've talked about, like how are we going to make, like, one vision he had, his name's Justin, he's an incredible designer, Vachon is his last name, is how to make a review distinct. He's like, it kind of looks like how previews look right now. Like, how are we, you know, that's like something that stood out to him as a designer. So I think that's the other aspect of creating a unique feeling in reviews that can kind of separate them.
Well, along those lines, 8 or 9 years ago when you were starting out here, you were doing Weird Wednesday YouTube Let's Plays, among other
things. Hell yeah.
And in your words, you were talking to no one off of your Mac laptop. So when do you think people started paying attention and why? And do you think that that early, like, is it a good experience? Do people need to go through that sort of like, hey, I'm just doing this for me and nobody else is even watching?
I think people started, admittedly, people probably started noticing immediately, at least like one person. Like I do have some really deep cut fans that have been there for my entire career, which is like so cool. And I don't think that's unusual. There's so many kinds of gaming content. Like, I think your audience will form, and the people that seek out smaller creators or enjoy smaller creators tend to still enjoy the creator even as they grow. So there's definitely an element of that. Like, I think you're one person, assuming they are a person and not just like a Twitch bot, like, could very well be there for a decade plus long in your career. So I definitely don't want to discount that aspect of it. But I think as far as people really noticing at scale, I think it was probably more when I, maybe 2017, 2018, I think a bit more traction. Obviously, a lot of people know me from IGN, which was like 2019. But I definitely feel like I've had a growing audience in that PSLS era that I had, just because I was like putting out content at like a website and like all of that. Do people need to go through it? I think it's not even that you need to, it's that you have to. Like, I don't think there's a lot of people that really, I don't know, blow up quickly. Like, you can, you know, roll out of bed and just suddenly go from 0 to 100. So it's going to be part of the process. And I think you have to enjoy the work you're doing. I don't think it's necessarily about how many people see it. Like, I always felt like I was creating for other people, because inherently if I wasn't creating for other people, I wouldn't have published it, right? Like, so there's always some level of like, you want people to see your work. You're saying it because you want what you're saying to be shared, and you want to get out there and have somebody receive your message. But yeah, that's just kind of part of it. And I honestly feel like I'm almost completely the same regardless of those scenarios. Like, I've been on Twitch with like not a lot of people necessarily talking in chat, and just I still just go. But that's because I like to talk, and I talk a lot. So I'm like, oh, it's like some people really struggle with that. They're like, I don't know what to say if like no one's talking. It's like, I've never had that issue before. Like, it's just my, you know, we all have our different like strengths and things. And yeah, that's just never been an issue for me. So yeah, it's a fun time, but in a necessary time. But obviously for some people, it's a little bit more of a struggle, or maybe it's more discouraging. But yeah.
I have a couple things that I need you to answer for. The first being, why do you hate Mega Man?
Why do I hate Mega Man? I hate that they took the fun of platforming and forced you to recognize patterns. So that's why I hate Mega Man.
All right. I left on Bit by Bit, you say that, and you said it's petty little jumps, and I laughed pretty hard at that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. But also a deep cut. Yeah, my project is my friend Jess Reed, who works as a narrative person in the gaming space now at this point. But yeah, it's that. But yeah, and it is petty little jokes. It really is. But the memorization is really where I struggle, particularly the aspect of combat. There's some exceptions because, like, I like, you know, Super Meat Boy, and that has combat in the bosses in a sense, but the combat is more you're doing things around the environment, and, like, the environment ends up fighting for you. Because Mega Man has a gun, that's, like, his whole thing. It's, like, his arm or whatever. I don't know his anatomy. But it's, like, it's much more directly combative mixed with platforming, and I find that mixture really too challenging for me to enjoy. And funnily enough, it's also why I don't like Cuphead. It's like, I don't know, it's like I thought I could just jump, and it's like you're really kind of shooting, and you're just like, it's not my kind of game. But we'll see. I'd like to try Mega Man again one day, but I was like, I didn't like this, and I was surprised because it's like iconic platformer. I figured I'd like it by default.
Yeah, fair enough. And the other one, I just finished devouring the Fallout TV show, and I loved it. I don't watch a lot of TV, and I just, I devoured it more. Like, Mad Men, I think, is the last thing that I was really this into. And you describe it as okay to good.
Yeah. I think it's okay to good. I only watched the first two episodes, so I can't speak to the full scope of it. But I think it was fine. Like, nothing about it felt like it demanded to be seen to me. And that to me was what makes it land on okay to good. Admittedly, I'm not my critical expertise is definitely not in film and television, but you know, it is another literary medium in a sense, so like I've definitely dabbled a little bit here and there. But yeah, I think about the shows that really captured me in a way, and I wouldn't put Fallout as one of them. It's not bad by any means, and you know, if I see the full season through ever, I'm sure it'll be like kind of enjoyable, but not, you know, it's not Severance. And I get like it's a big bar, but it's like I think a lot of times when people see something gets like an okay to good rating, they're like, oh, so like, what do you mean? Like, it's so good. And it's like, and maybe it is, and we just have different opinions, but it's like, well, there's levels to good though, you know? And that scale goes really, really high. So I like to leave a little space there for it, you know? Cause it's like, I wouldn't put this like on that, you know, you opened with like the Prince of Persia question. It's like, to me, that's like that next breakthrough tier of titles. Like, if we're not really reserving that for something, why do we even have it? You know, it's like, yeah, so that's kind of it. It's like, do I think this is one of the best TV shows out? It's like, no, but like, it's fine. It's enjoyable. It's better than I thought it would be, but it's not, you know, at that wow to me.
Fair enough. What's the story behind your Japanese Pokemon cards? Because you don't collect Pokemon cards, so why did you get these?
Oh, my Japanese. Oh, yeah, man, this is such a deep cut. I have those from when I was a kid. I think they were my brother's, so I feel like this would have to be a him question. I'm guessing he got them because he thought they were cool. I don't know if he got them somewhere else, because I know we have like random things that we got from Mexico at one point, and I wonder if those cards were one of those things, but I don't know. So I'm not sure about that. And then I had them in my like room and stuff for a while, because we still had you know, I wouldn't say we full on went into like collecting the cards, because like, it's funny, like collections were so big in the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, they're still big now, because like people collect plenty of things, Funko Pops, whatever. But I feel like, you know, the Pokemon cards, and that like I was in the Bionicles era and they came out with those lines. And kind of quickly you realize that like, yeah, I don't have the financial access to like really collect any of these things. So you kind of end up with just a couple sleeves. It's like, yeah, we got like a bin of Hot Wheels. Some of them aren't really Hot Wheels, but like, that's kind of it. Like, I'm not going to have a full set. So I think that's kind of it. It's like, they seemed cool, so we had that in our kind of collection, and the sleeve survived that era, and I kind of kept it around. And I have no idea where it is now, but that's sort of how they fell into my lap. I don't think I acquired them. I think they were just like a family set, if you will.
All right. Well, speaking of cards, you were made into a Final Fantasy VII Rebirth Queen's Blood card by Bob Buell.
Yeah.
I hope I'm pronouncing that right. The whole Min-Max crew was made into cards. I have never played the FF7 remakes, so I've never played the card game. Are you a good card? Like, are your stats good?
That's a great question. I am quickly trying to scroll to see what I would say short answer, yes, because the cards are really versatile. Like, Queen's Blood is so fun. And the remake of Final Fantasy has been an enjoyable time overall, right? If I start to really dig, we got some friction points, but like, I'm really enjoying 7 Rebirth when I can pull myself out of a lot of minigame content. But one piece of minigame content that I love is Queen's Blood. It's so good. Let's see, my stats are, okay, so I destroyed the card underneath me. I have to my right a 3 vertical, and then to the right of that bottom 3 is, I think, another destruction. What, there's like a red and another red, and I forget. I think one is like a modifier to stats, and then one is like a destruction one. I would say, like, I think that's pretty good because I like how it sort of claims lanes. So, like, you know, I don't know, like, the how many people will know or not know Queen's Blood, but you're kind of getting almost turf on a little board, and each card you put down has like points associated with it, and you're trying to win each row. If you win a row, you get the points. So it's like 7 to 6. Like, if I have 7 and you have 6, I gain 7 points, you don't gain anything. So then it also becomes like needing a certain amount of a lead to like win or whatever. Yeah, I feel like it's pretty good. It gives me 2 points. It does cost, you need 2 like little pawns, I guess, like there. Like, you need to claim the space like 2 times over to like gain the ability to place me. But I think once you do, you gain like a pretty good amount of spaces, I feel like. And there are spaces forward, which I have a hard time moving forward in that game sometimes. So yeah, I think it's pretty good. It's funny, I was looking at that as well. I'm like, what kind of stats do people get? And I'm so curious to ask, like, Bob, I don't know if he's talked about it on like our other content as like part of the, you know, in the community, us talking to the community, like in Bonus Pod or anything like that. But I'm so curious to what degree, if any, did the statistical layering go into it? Because I do kind of feel like, I'm like, is this Bob's vision of like our personalities in the form of powers in this mini game of this remake? Like, I want to know how deep it goes, but I like to think there is some association and that this says something good about me.
You mentioned your brother there. Do you still do your yearly FIFA tournaments?
We haven't done them in a while, but I do want to bring them back. We've just been, like, busy. And then we don't live together anymore, too. So it's like, now we got to go online to do it. But I'm hoping to bring that back for FIFA 25. EAFC 25, actually.
Oh, that's right, eh?
Yeah, sorry, last year, EAFC. Or 2 years ago, maybe? I think it was last year. Last year, I think.
What's the best FIFA or soccer game that you've ever played? What's your favorite?
I have a soft spot for FIFA, I think either 16 or 17, because that was kind of when I first got really into it. So like one of those are like, well, not early, but for me, early ones were like my favorite. But truly, I do think they get like better every year. Obviously, there's balancing stuff with like the My Player and all that, but I don't do any of that. So like, I understand the community has beefs with like the microtransactions, blah, 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 blah. Like all that. Like, I get that. I do not play that section of the game. So for me, the game is just as one, you know, playing with friends and things. And I love the additional details that they add to the sports sim have been really fun to see. I think, too, the one bummer in the more recent ones is they lost their contract or didn't renew their contract with Liga MX, which is like the Mexican soccer league, which is like really like sucks because it's like I play a lot of those teams and it's just like they're just not in the game. So holding out hope that I don't know, gets resolved or re-pursued or something. So yeah, I'll go with FIFA 17, question mark. I feel like it was like maybe second to first or something for me.
For those tournaments you had with your brother, you would always do themes, like all Bundesliga or something, you know. Do you have a favorite theme looking back?
Oh yeah. The Bundesliga one was really fun. That one was really fun because we had like the German beers and everything, and I don't think we got food for it, but I like the women's ones are always really fun. And I think my favorite might have to be, honestly, I think my favorite one might have been the Japanese one, because like our J-League tournament, because I think what's really fun about doing these themed leagues is, especially if it's a league that you don't follow, it's kind of a way for you to get to know the players and the teams. And I was really into, like, I think Gamba Osaka is one of the teams that I was, like, really drawn to. And there's another one, I forget the name of it, but their logo was, like, a squirrel with, like, a big fluffy tail. And I love that team, besides the fact that the logo was awesome. They, like, really came through for me a lot of times, so that was kind of one of my favorites, and I like that aspect of it, and I feel like our J League tournament embodied that the most. And then it was really fun because we at the time did it all on poster board, like the keeping track, and the design of the poster board, we could just put like the red in the middle to be like the flag, which also looked really cool. So yeah, I think I'm gonna go with the J League tournament.
Do you still have any of those physical boards?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think we did agree to toss them because I don't think anyone wanted the burden of keeping them around. It's tough being a big fan of like physical items because at a certain point you do realize I kind of just have a lot of stuff and I don't really need all this stuff. So I think we might have gotten rid of them at this point.
How heated did it get?
Like getting rid of it? Or the tournaments?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, the tournaments.
Pretty... Not, like, too heated, because I think we both are, like, fairly level-headed, and neither of us are too, like, showboaty, but I think I was definitely the madder one, because I'm not as good as my brother in FIFA, so it's a lot harder, so it's, like, picture, like, a really close game, but, like, you statistically will only come out on top, like, 25% of the time on those close games, so you have the passion of, like, being on the edge of your seat, but the sting of consistent failure, and then... It's almost worse that he's nicer in some ways. I mean, I prefer him to be nice than to be mean, but it's like, he's like, oh man, like, but you're like really close though. And it's like, but I'm not. Like, I, you know, it's like, I don't feel like, it's like, it's like classic thing, you know, it's funny, he's, you know, in media as well and kind of coming up and all that. And that feeling of like, when you're coming up in media, so many people will tell you, you're right there, like, your stuff's so good. And like, that's true, but like, it doesn't end up mattering if you don't get the gig. And that's kind of, and you're just like, yeah, but like, I'm broke or I'm struggling or whatever. And that's the feeling I have in those tournaments generally, especially when I like had never won one, that was like really weighing on me. And then finally having won one of the tournaments was at least like, okay, at least I did that. And that's like something, but yeah. So it's, I'd say fairly, but I think it fizzles out pretty quickly because at the end of the day, like, it is just a game. So it's fine. But yeah, it's funny. It's the sting of like, if you care about sports and you see like your team lose, but like, imagine you're like kind of on the team in a way, but like not one-to-one, but it kind of has that vibe. It's like, what if you lost the World Cup personally? You know, it's like, what if that was really personal? And that's kind of been, I think the emotional weight of the tournaments, but they're fun.
So I apologize. I'm going to ask a question that I feel like you've probably been asked 1,000 times, but you used to be an English teacher. What made you make the switch from English teacher to games critic?
Yeah, I not always wanted to make the switch, but before I started the career, I pretty much knew I wanted to do games media. I only went to teach because at the time, like, I'd just gotten my degree. I did all this work to get the degree. I generally like teaching. And I like was like, okay, let me just use the degree and like give this a shake. And then my plan was to build up my media career on the side. So like by day I would teach and live and make my income. And then I would like build up my career on the side until it was like stable enough to like transition over. And the reason that I left teaching, I only did like the 1 year, was because I realized that while some people can do the like my 40-hour day job and my 40-hour passion project, like, I couldn't. I'm like, I just don't have it in me to do it, especially because teaching is such a take your work home with you kind of job. I know, like, that's obviously a discussion of itself, of teachers trying to find that work-life balance and not take, but like, you have so much, and it's such an important job. Like, if I had had any other job, I probably would have stayed working at a job and doing like my stuff on the side for longer. But it's like the mental weight of, in the emotional weight of what teaching is, like, it takes so much time from you and so much out of you that I'm like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to grow my media career while also teaching. Like, it is not possible for me. And that's why, like, I left to go do this, because I'm like, well, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to work on this. And if I, like, can't make it, I'll just go get a regular job and then continue to work on it if I want to. And if I don't want to, you could just not, because you can kind of just do whatever you want at the end of the day within some reason. But like, ultimately, it's like, okay, you want to give up, you can just give up. Oh, you don't? Okay, cool. Oh, you gave up, but you start again? Well, I guess you didn't give up then. I guess you just took a break.
What do you mean when you say you want your gaming experiences and the content you create to be a universe?
I feel like I mean... Oh, man, what do I mean? I think I mean, like, the idea of something really thorough and bringing in whatever's necessary to convey whatever I want to get across. So I think, like, with the, you know, review angle, it's like bringing in any comparison points, metaphors, whatever have you, to kind of get across the idea and the feeling that I want people to understand of, like, oh, what makes this game good, what makes this game bad, without you ever having played it, without you ever having seen it. Like, how can I quickly paint this picture and then then analyze the picture that I painted? And then I also think just the idea of doing a lot of different kinds of content, you know, streaming, podcasting, writing, like, all of it to me is a form of criticism, and they're just different ways to, like, do the same thing.
You used to write guides, and I'm so curious, like, how do you know that you've got everything in a game? Like, how do you know that your guide is thorough enough? Like, maybe you've missed something.
I think it depends on what the game is. And a lot of times, not all the time, and especially people, different sites do different guides differently based on what their approach is, the scope of the game, how they just want to tackle the project. So you might be the only person doing a guide, and I've been the only person on some guides, or you might just be one person within a team of people, which is one a little bit more common, especially I think now. At the time, I did more solo stuff than I think most people would have people do. And when you're doing solo stuff, it depends on what your assignment is. Because even in that, like, when I've had solo guides, usually my job is not to do everything in the game, because that would be too much stuff. So a lot of solo guide work is usually just a walkthrough, which it's like, okay, well, you know, you did it all because you finished the game and the rest doesn't really matter. And then the other things are, like, more subjective, like tips and tricks, where it's like, okay, it's whatever you think is a useful tip or trick. I think as far as, like, collectibles, a lot of games do have, like, some form of in-game tracking. Most games have some element of in-game tracking. Obviously, there are games where, like, you're still discovering things to this day. I mean, I think about, like, what the Reddit posts that learned, oh, when Link whistles, the fish will be on shore. Like, people didn't know that, you know, at the time. I'm sure people went in and wrote that back in to a lot of their tips and tricks pages, you know, sourcing back to whatever the originator of where they got the information from is. So that's kind of how you would know, basically. Sometimes talking to other people playing the game as well. A lot of times, not always, especially if you are on, like, the freelance side of things where you don't have as much direct contact with staff, but there might be, like, other members playing the game for review or playing the game for podcasts that might be able to answer things or speak to things. Yeah, that's basically it. Then, of course, when the game comes out, there's, like, more information on it out. You can also talk to, like, the team about things, but that's how you know. Generally, most games, you do have a way of knowing, at least in a general sense, like, here are these items or here's whatever. So it's not too bad. But thankfully, a lot of guide projects don't require one singular individual to do every single thing in the game. I think the only time that really happens is if the game is really, really short. But frankly, if a game is that short and that small, it probably isn't doing heavy guide traffic anyway, and probably won't get covered at all, or won't need to be covered at that level of detail. So, not too bad of an issue. Mostly I would just ask Brendan Graber, because he's a really good guide writer. I know when I did The Last of Us 2, and I was working on that alone, and then they're like, we're gonna have Brendan jump over and help you. When Brendan got there, I was like, Brendan, thank God you're here. I have not found all these coins, and this thing is due real soon. What was I gonna do if you didn't show up? Just do my best, I guess, just hope. I was like, I don't know. So I had him go in and fill that in, and he's so freaking good at that job. But yeah, thank God for teams.
I do like the idea of, like, oh, I have a deadline, but I'm, like, stuck on this boss.
Oh my God. I had so many. One of my first bigger guides that I did was Darksiders 3, and I was so stuck on bosses in that game. That game is so hard, and yeah, you just had to, and that's, like, the tough thing too, when you're like, and this hits more with, like, a guide, I guess, because the guide is so much more work than a review is. But even with a review or just kind of any piece of content, it's like, sometimes what you need in playing a game is, like, to step away. It's like, oh, tomorrow will be easier. It's like, sure, but now you just lost a lot of time. So that's always been, that's always a rough point too, of, like, doing coverage on an embargo of any sort, because, like, you don't know how long it's going to take you, or if you get stuck, or if anything happens. You're kind of trying to, like, always be ahead, because anything might put you behind. Yay, deadlines.
Can you describe what your kitchen table work sessions are like?
Yeah, I mean, I usually am on my laptop. I guess exclusively on my laptop. I don't really do work on my phone. Usually, yeah, just pull up the laptop. Sometimes if I'm doing other planning, I might have a physical planner. I haven't really been using my physical planner that much. And that's basically it. If I have space to plug in, I'll plug in. My current table isn't a good plug-in situation, so I try to avoid that when I can. And ideally, the table... Maybe I'll have some coffee. Ideally, the table's cleared off before I start working, or at least, like, all the garbage is, like, moved to one side. Sometimes other people will be there. Sometimes I'll just be by myself. Sometimes I'll ask, like, hey, I'm going to work on the table if, you know, my partner or whoever I live with wants to come through and do some work. But, yeah, that's the session.
Cool. I got a couple more questions. I know you've written, maybe you still do, you write poetry. Have you written any poetry that is about or inspired by video games?
Yeah, I did what was it called? It wasn't like a senior project. I think it was just a project. One of my classes, like I ended up making this sort of chapbook of like different poems all centered on like anxiety. And I don't know how many pieces there were, 10 or something like that. And like one of them was inspired by Unravel. And it was like about unraveling kind of like mentally. And the text was sort of presented on the page as being like in pieces. So you'd have like some stuff on the left and the right. And it would kind of like loop around like loose thread kind of thing. Because I was really trying to like play with a lot of my poetry background is performance poetry, like slam poetry, which is like the big thing there is, well, you get to present it and perform it. And that's kind of what gives it its sauce. Like just written on the page, it's like not as strong because it's not designed for page readings. So here I really want to also like work with form and how like form can create, you know, a deeper layer to the pieces. So like that's something I like remember about that. But that was one. I probably did a couple things here and there just as like experiments, but I never really like found, you know, oh, like this poem from like at a Peach's perspective is really good. Like I've probably dabbled in that a little bit, but I think the Unravel one's the only one that's like, oh, this is like a cool piece and I like this piece. It's not specifically about the game, but I thought about it because I was playing the game at the time and I like the idea of unraveling, kind of ran with that.
When you performed that, did anyone pick up on that theme, or is it pretty, you know, buried in there?
Oh, it's like really buried. It's like soup. It's like I don't think anyone would notice outside of just that made the titling or something, but I don't think anyone would draw those two together.
All right, the last thing I'll ask about, you went to GDC this year for the very first time. How was that?
It was really fun. I felt, I kind of felt like I had like snuck onto campus because like, you know, I'm in media, I'm not a developer. It's the developers conference. It's like all technical stuff, like peer to peer. And I'm like, and then there's me. And I kind of like, I almost felt like a little bad. I'm like, oh, I shouldn't like, I mean, plenty of media people go, but I'm like, I'm just here, like, listening to, like, what you guys have to say. So I did feel a little bit like a fly on a wall in that sense. But it was really, really cool. It's just nice to get a deeper knowledge set on gaming. And obviously, like, the onus on that is always on me or, like, whoever wants to gain information. There's plenty of books and talks and articles and stuff. But it's so hard to... I think one of the challenges of, like, working in any craft is, especially if you are, like, working by trade, like you're not like in a school scenario, like you need to like make money and live. It's like you spend so much time like doing your stuff and making your stuff, you don't always get a lot of time. It's harder to carve out time to improve and grow and like what are those things that could take you to that next level. So I love GDC as like a moment to like have that learning, kind of like a little like I've always wanted to do like a little sabbatical for myself on stuff. That's like a goal of mine one day to like really do something with that and like spend some time like studying up on something or like coming up with like a project. And yeah, GDC felt like a little taste of that. So hoping to, you know, really retain and build on some of those pieces of information and try to like weave that into, you know, my criticism, my podcast, all of that.
Cool. People can check you out. I'm scared I'm going to mispronounce it now. Gamonesis.
Yep.
.card.co. That's GAMEONYSUS.CARRD.co. Anywhere else you want people to check you out? What's on the horizon for you?
Yeah, on the horizon, I am working on another review. I'm working on a review of Botany Manor. I've talked about that on a couple podcasts already, but I'm trying to get like the actual review out. I'm trying to be better about still writing about games, even if I don't hit like the embargoes for games, because I feel like that's discouraged me in the past from like cranking out content. We'll be working on my best of 2024 list that will come out this month. I'm going to speak that into existence. So those are things coming down the pipeline there. You can check out youtube.com/GameOnesis for my VODs of my Twitch streams, patreon.com/GameOnesis for more content, early access stuff, just to support financially if you wish to, follow for free if you'd like to. And yeah, again, GameOnesis is my handle everywhere. Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, TikTok, Instagram. And I really hope no one makes any more social medias, because remember that month where they made like three different kinds of Twitter?
Yes.
Like, it's funny too, because I was running Minimax's socials during that. It was like Ben's paternity leave. And I'm like, why do we, this job got really like convoluted really fast. I'm like, hey, I set us up with like 8 new accounts. Like, I don't know. We have like accounts everywhere now. It's super weird. But yeah, that's what's coming up. So check it out.
Janet Garcia, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.